Hello and welcome to episode 61 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we're talking about filler games, the games between the games, or really, just short, fun, easy-to-learn games. Whatever they are, we'll look at a few of our favorites. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Giljam and Jorge Gia, and Adam Harrison. A huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
And a huge apology to everyone listening, because this is our first time doing this whole... We're not remote, but we're in my travel kit. So we're working through the difficulties of me being in a different city.
Also, my dog is here. So if you hear dog sounds, sorry.
He's doing a good job sleeping now.
He is. He had a very exciting day of doing nothing with me. So,
all right. The more important announcements aren't really announcements. I don't really have any major announcements besides, oh, wait, if you're listening to this right now, I am on a ship, hopefully in the middle of the Bahamas, hopefully not surrounded by adverse weather. Potentially, going to be getting married in 2 days from the day this drops.
Wow.
Exactly. So that's an announcement. But to that end, we're recording this really early, so I don't feel the pressure yet. Besides, I still need to pack. Wow, this is like a time travel thing. So I'm talking to the future from the past. That's what we do all the time, though.
It is.
Okay.
Just slightly less far into the future most days.
Exactly. All right. So we have a contest for this month, though. The whole theme is I'm moving and everything's in boxes. So I'm giving away a ton of stuff. Really, it's just random good games that I'm going to put in a medium-sized Home Depot box and I'm going to ship to you. And it's if you need games, it's a good starter. If you don't need games, well, take them anyway because I don't have room for them. And it's all going to be good. Deadline is November 3rd. Enter by emailing me at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com with the subject line October giveaway. And yeah, all kinds of fun stuff there. Convention season is still not over. So Game Hole Con is first weekend of November. We'll be there, I want to say the 5th, 6th, 7th. 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th? Something along those lines?
What can people expect at Game Hall Con? I'm sure you've gone through it before, but give people an idea of flavor of this one.
I guess we are getting closer, so it's worth talking more about.
Yeah.
Game Hall Con is a convention in Madison, Wisconsin. It will be probably between, I want to say, 1,500 to 3,000 people. I think closer to the 1,500. Don't know the exact numbers, but it's not a big convention. Everyone plays games the entire time. Like, really, you go there to play games. You get tickets. You have tables. We have two tables that are going to be playing games for all Friday, Saturday, and Sunday morning. I'm doing a role-playing game there. It's already sold out. There's tons and tons of special guests. Normally in, like, kind of the role-playing environment. But I would say it's about 70% role-playing, 30% board games. Lots of publishers and designers. And it's really a lot of industry people and dealers when you consider how few people are there. So it's a lot of one-on-one attention.
Oh, okay. So that's kind of interesting. So you get to see some of the kind of industry people in a kind of closer way than you would in other conventions.
Exactly. Yep.
So this is Thursday through Sunday?
Thursday through Sunday.
All right. So that's the 2nd through the 5th. You're way off.
Yeah, don't come on the 5th. It'll already be over. So you're in November. November 2nd
November 2nd is a Thursday through Sunday the 5th.
Excellent. So yes. So I will be there. I will be there Thursday. I think you're
going to
be there.
Arriving Thursday as well.
So
possibly with you.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yep. And then
really?
Sydney's coming up Friday evening. Josh is going to be in another country. Yeah. That's what he does when we go to conventions. He goes
to
somewhere. Weird places. that's all right. He's not a real person. He's just a voiceover audio effect.
Yes.
He's the animated Muppet.
Exactly.
I am the first AI, and this is what they use me for.
Yep. So we're looking forward to it. It's the weekend after our Chicago wedding reception, so it'll be kind of a wind down fun. I'm not going to have a normal week for another month and a half, so it's going to be fun, though. Kickstarters, Near and Far, which I backed last year, and came a couple months ago, and we played one so far, but it's good. We want to play it again. Lots of games. Has an expansion called the Amber Mines, which is coming out. It's a modular expansion, so you can swap in the Amber Mines. It replaces the Mines tile and has like 43 mine cards. There's a magic thing you can put in that replaces the Mystic Hut, which adds spells. There's a new general store. There's new threats. And then with stretch goals, they're adding more stuff, which they've already hit all their stretch goals. They funded 220,000 out of 20,000 goal, so they're 200,000 over. Oh, it adds a co-op mode.
Oh, yay.
So now you can play it full co-op. The base price is only $20 for the expansion. It'll be $25 retail when it comes out. But you can also get the base game with it. There's also some above and beyond or above and below expansion stuff, too.
Nice.
So mostly from previous Kickstarters that they're making available. And it has about 2.5 weeks to go, so you don't have to rush. But if it's something that he's like, oh, man, I really like Near and Far, or I really wish I would got on the Kickstarter and got all the exclusives, this one is offering all of those same exclusives.
Nice.
So all good things there. That is all I'm going to do for announcements. So we have a lot of feedback. Josh, help.
Indeed. Well, yes, let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. And the first one is from David Radke. He says, I felt the need to talk about Mahjong, which is one of my favorites. First, anyone who thinks that Mahjong is a tile matching game on the computer is wrong.
That's me.
Yeah, me. I totally played it in the 90s Windows.
I've never played it for
You've
in real life.
You've never played it with people?
No.
I guess I don't know that I've actually played, but I've at least watched it played.
Yeah. Kitties. Sydney's mom teaches Mahjong at conventions, and I've never played it. And if she ever finds out that I haven't played it, then she'll teach me.
She might bring it on the ship.
She's going to be on the ship. So maybe by the time you hear this, I will have played it.
Sure. So he says that computer version is simply a solitaire game that uses the Mahjong tiles. Mahjong for real is a four-person tile game that is actually similar to the card game Rummy. You try to collect various sets and runs of tiles. One of my favorite things about the game is the setup that includes building four walls of tiles in the center of the game table and rolling the dice to break the wall, which starts the game.
Wait, there's dice involved too?
Yeah, and you like chuck it at this wall of tiles and they like blow up and explode. That sounds amazing.
Are we sure that that's how that works?
I don't know, but keep reading.
A lot David of what Radke I learned said. About Mahjong, I learned from the Joy Luck Club, so I'm not going to quote myself.
I'm going to become an expert on this by our next show. Well, not an expert, but I'm going to play the game at least once.
Probably, yeah. I mean, we can ask Sydney's mom about it.
It should be fair that this may seem... this is in response to our last episode, Ancient Games, and Mahjong was not on that list, but a couple people had mentioned it. And just in case this is your first episode ever.
We briefly talked about it in the sort of pre-show thing that, should we include Mahjong? We didn't quite make it in. But David Radke goes on, Mahjong has a special place in my heart. My father brought a set home from his time in Korea during the war. But none of us, lost my place, could ever figure out how to play when I was a kid. Flash forward to the days of the internet and YouTube videos, and now I can play with the best of them. My dad would be so happy that the Mahjong set is finally getting played.
David got a little snarky there at the end.
I don't know if Josh did. Reading did.
Oh, yeah. I just injected some... Yeah. Well, sorry, David.
all good.
All right.
If he's not a patron next week, we'll know why.
Sometimes I get so into character. It's crazy.
All right. Moving on to some feedback from Michael Ohl. I liked the last episode a lot. To tack on to your comments on gambling in games with dice, some of the best poker players in the world are also champion backgammon players. Seems even today the worlds overlap between actual gambling and these games.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the more interesting things that last, because I didn't know until, the idea that as soon as dice get involved, it's considered gambling. And the game is, innocent as backgammon, at least when I was growing up, was like an outlawed gambling game.
I'm excited to eventually do a whole topic on dice games, because I also learned a lot about craps that we never talked about on our Ancient Games episode. Didn't really fit in.
I think we need to do one on like just gambling games in general, right? Too.
Yeah.
So
many potential topics.
So many potential topics. Like, we're up to episode 61, which is a lot. Like, we used to, back if you listened, like, episode 10, that was a big deal for us. Like, it was huge. Episode 20, I wanted to celebrate every 5 episodes. Right? Now it's like, oh, 61, whatever. We're not running out of topics. Like, it's kind of cool. We've repeated a couple, I think the solo game, co-op game, but things like that change. We're going to do another one on Kickstarter, just because I think Kickstarter's really big in the industry, so it's worth doing again. But we just have so many things to talk about. It's really cool.
That's true.
All right.
Oh, yes, it's Jason Marks this time. First up, good episode with some interesting information. I had no idea how far back some of these games went, especially backgammon. I believe I read somewhere that Go is the most played game in the world, though chess probably beats it in the West.
If you read it, it's probably true. Just saying.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I imagine it's the Chinese play it. There's like 1.5 billion of them. So.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, there's a lot of games, but how many of them are like mass market and played? And Go, anybody can set that up, so you can really play it anywhere. It makes sense to me.
That's true.
And I also agree that maybe chess in the West is a little more common.
In other countries, like you said, you know, you can just do holes in the ground and pebbles, and you've got to go.
No, that's...
I'm thinking
that's
of...
That's Mancala.
Mancala. Forget what I said.
Yeah.
So, for the listener asking for some two-player games that would work in the hospital, I will start by suggesting the travel versions of any of the games you mentioned in the Ancient Games episode.
Good point.
For more modern stuff, I have a couple of suggestions. Lately, my brother and I have been playing Triplock from Chip Theory Games, which is a fairly small footprint on the table and is fairly fun to play. I will also recommend Grifters, a card-based game where you draft members of a gang to do jobs in a cyberpunk setting. I mostly picked it up as a time filler and didn't have very high hopes for it when I got it. When we played it, we actually ended up really enjoying it, and we played it multiple times when we don't have a ton of time to play.
Yeah, I think Triplock is probably the perfect hospital game. There is some dice, there's 3 dice that you can roll. So if you're a wild dice roller, you might want a dice tray. But otherwise, it's just 4 stacks of poker chips, and they're just 3 high. And there's like a little neoprene mat that you put it on. And it's a 2-player competitive game, but I think you can also do it co-op. And you can also do it solo. So it's a good suggestion. I did not think of that one.
All right, Justin adds a few. His suggestions are Onitama, Battle Lines, Lost Cities, Mintworks, One Deck Dungeon, and Patchwork.
So the only ones I've played is One Deck Dungeon. Also really good small footprint.
I like that one, yeah.
Patchwork has a little bit bigger table space, but it depends.
It's hard to set up that circle of pieces in a small space, was my recollection.
Can you just kind of layer them a bit more? Like, you could probably do it.
You'd have to tighten them up a little bit. It's not a huge footprint.
Yeah.
And it's a great game. So if you have, really like I say, fun. Maybe 2-foot by 2-foot table, you'd be fine.
I think Patchwork could work in most places.
Onitama, I have to get this game. All I ever hear about it is how great this game is, so I just need to pick it up. Battle Lines, Lost Cities, and Mintworks, though. Mintworks was recommended for Josh last week.
That's true.
So we need to track that one down, too.
We do.
All right. Andrew goes on with a few. Gloom, if they have an appreciation for dark humor, maybe not the best for a hospital setting.
I'm going to agree with that one. if you don't know Gloom, the concept of Gloom is you want to be the first person that gets your 5 characters all killed. So not necessarily the best hospital game.
Boss Monster, fun, simple, quick to learn and play. Game seemed like a classic video game.
I like it.
Fits, if they like word games. Hive, I don't know that much about it personally, but did research for 2-player games for my sister and her husband a while back, and this one came up a lot. This may run out of room on a hospital table, though, but I think it should be okay.
Yep. So what I recommend for Hive is Hive Pocket Edition.
Okay.
Hive is a really, really good 2-player, I want to say chess-like, because it's, again, that concept of there's no randomness. You're not drawing from a random bag or anything. You have a number of pieces in front of you. Each little bug moves in a certain way, and you're trying to surround your opponent's queen. So you're just moving pieces around. When their queen can't move, you win. It has an organic, each piece is like a hex stone kind of thing. So they fit together very nebulously. So they can put, there's no designated play space you have to have. I think this would be fine on a small table, especially if you had the travel version, which is not different than the other version in any way, except for the little
pieces are smaller. All right.
Yep. It's cute. I got it for Sydney when we were first dating because she really likes ladybugs. And they have a ladybug expansion. So I'm like, well, I'll get you the base game so I can get the expansion and then I can do the whole ladybug thing.
She really does. I helped you move and there was like this huge ladybug pillow. It's like the size of me.
It's a really cute pillow.
It's very nice.
Yeah. Christy started a thread on BGG on this very topic. So I'm just going to quickly go through these because there's some pretty good suggestions there. Christy recommends Codenames Duet. That one might be tricky because you need a 5x5 grid of cards. But as long as you have the room for it, it is a really good two-player game. Tides of Time or Tides of Madness, The Fox in the Forest, Hanabi. This one has a really small footprint. It's a cooperative. I can't see the cards in my hands, only you can. So you have to share information in, like, you have that card and that card is blue and this card's a two and you're trying to get all the cards played out from one to five. Star Realms is also a good one. Terrence mentions the travel versions, again, of any of the games we talked about, which is a good point. Michael talks about Mintworks again, Brewcrafters, the travel card game, Dice Heist with a dice tray, Guillotine, pretty simple. It's just a line of cards, maybe six or seven deep, and Seven Dragons, which is a matching game, if I remember correctly. And then Steve mentioned Space Hulk, Death Angel, the card game. This one is a fantasy flight game, which it comes in they have a Silver Line series for a little while. So it might be hard to find, but I own it. I've never played it. I got it because the box looked really cool, though. Blockus Duo. It's an Blockus Duo. Okay.
That's a fun game.
What is it?
It's like a tile placement where you have different shape pieces that you're trying to take up the most space but also touch your pieces together. I think
are they like clear plastic pieces?
They are clear plastic pieces. Yep. Normally it's played four players, the normal version.
All right. Timelines, Invasions, and Splendor is good for everything. I think it just works. And Splendor has a great iPad or tablet version of the game, plus an iPhone or Android version of the game. So those ones are very good. We are now going to go right on topic because we have so many things to talk about filler games.
In this episode, we're talking about filler games. Fun, fast, easy to learn. Normally 3+ players. But do we sell these games short? Are they really just filler, or are they just fun little games? As always, we'll talk about it until we run out of time.
Literally, because I only have exactly 45 minutes left on this card.
That's crazy. This is like Mission Impossible.
Dun, 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 dun.
That's the tension. That'd
be a good filler game.
Is there a game Mission Impossible? There must be.
There has to be a game Mission Impossible.
Surely. Look that up, people. We will before next week.
No, we probably won't, because again, I'm on a boat. But filler games, not filling any more time. We're going to talk about this subject because I have a premise. First of all, I'm going to define filler games.
Okay.
All right.
Because everyone just kind of uses filler games for games. They're like, oh, that's a good little filler game. But what really is a filler game? I don't think a filler game is a two-player game. It can be, but there's a lot of two-player games that you can play heads up and it fills times. And what makes a two-player game a filler game versus an actual head-to-head strategy game or something like that? Like, nobody would call checkers a filler game.
Yeah.
But it still plays fairly quickly and is easy to learn. So my definition for this particular episode is more than two players, plays in about 20 to 45 minutes. You know, it can go a little bit more sometimes, it can go a little bit less sometimes, but about that range, and is easy to learn. Because I think a lot of times filler games are these simple games, and that's why we think of them as filler games, is because that way, if they're not easy to learn, then they can't possibly be a filler game.
Well, yeah, I mean, I want to say to the listeners, feel free to revolt on that and tell Chris he's absolutely wrong about his definition of filler games. But yeah, I mean, that sounds reasonable to me.
Absolutely. Send me an email. I'm sure that I will read it. Probably.
Okay. You read the emails. I'll be reading.
Well, you guys are going to be on a cruise. I might be reading all the emails. Oh, I see. That's what
you
meant.
Oh, you are going to read it. Yeah. Well, I want to kind of start with some input that we got from Jason on the thread, because he sort of counters me with a couple things. He's like, my gaming group has game day events that bring 8 to 12 people throughout the day to play games. Sometimes a few players will be involved in a medium weight game while others arrive. The filler games are good games to play till we can get enough people to join a game for 4 to 5 players. Also, filler games are usually great introduction games for new players. My current favorites, and here's where the list is interesting, are a few HABA games. Kung Fu Dice and Space Planets. Certain. I don't know these games, but they're HABA, so I'm assuming that they're good light games. Other filler games that are present in our groups these days are Munchkin. That game's pretty darn serious for a filler game. And it's very much screw your neighbor and like fighting and you think you're gonna win? Nope, because I have this reverse card. I'm gonna double this and make that hard. And then you have Magic the Gathering, which I think that's a lifestyle game, not necessarily a filler game. Sorry, Jason.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think some people again will disagree with you on this one. But
to be fair, Jason didn't have your definition in front of him when he wrote this message.
That's true. I'm just saying. I want to.
Yeah.
It's sort of the reason why I want to define what we're talking about here, just to level set. I think Magic the Gathering can be a filler game if you already know how to play it, you already have a deck, and you just want to play a quick, again, this is the two player thing, but you just want to play a quick 20 minute two player game. It can fill time for certain. But it's not a game where I would break out because, you know, there's a couple of people that can't get into a game at a party and say, oh, well, here's a couple of Magic the Gathering decks, have at it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't necessarily do that.
That's true.
Other games he mentions are Smash Up, which I actually do think that this one can fall into the filler area. It does play fairly quickly. It can play long, but it's a light game, pretty easy to learn. Timeline and... I always get this wrong. Suro? Tesoro?
Is it Suro or Zuro?
I don't know. T-S-U-R-O.
Suro.
Yeah.
I'm sure that came across great in the microphone.
Yes. Suro. Yeah. So, but that's why I want to just kind of level set on what these are. Here's my main premise, though. I think when we call something a filler game, we are thinking that it's only good to fill time. Like literally, Terrence mentioned, to me, a filler game is something you play to fill some time, which I suppose is any game, hence the wide definition. So it is, I don't think these games are just to fill time because there's a lot of things you can do to fill time. And if it's not a fun game, it's not a game you'd want to play, then you wouldn't want to necessarily fill your time with it anyway. So if we say it's a filler game that's just used to wait to play the real game, then really what you're saying is this game isn't good enough to be the real game. And I don't know that that's always true. You guys are looking interesting.
I agree with you. It can also be to fill the time, not because you just like, oh, this is just something we're doing to fill the time. It's just like, this is a short game. And that's why it's filling the time, because it's the right length of play to fill that space of time. Not because it's like, oh, you know, this is some terrible, awful game. And I can't wait for the real game.
Well, someone mentioned, this was Terrence. Go to my definition of a filler game. My go-to definition of a filler game is Flux. Now, Flux is one of those games where you either hate it or, it's okay. Some people love it, but most people are like, it's okay. Flux is a filler game, although I gave this game to a group of people at, it was my engagement party, but we were playing board games, so it was like a kind of a game party too. Unfortunately, I scaled it up beyond the player limit. I think there were like 8 people playing it.
It's not.
I walked away thinking, oh, they're only going to play that for 20 or 30 minutes. I came back an hour and a half. They were still playing the same game.
Oh, no.
Flux breaks when you spread the cards out over that many people and nobody can get a win condition. It was not a filler game at that point. It was a fed up with this game.
Oh, no.
I think Flux is actually a good game. It's fine for 3 or 4 players at a table. I don't think it has to be a filler to fill time. I think it's just a short game you can play on a small footprint for the most part, because you know you have your little cards in front of you and you have your draw and rule cards, and it's pretty straightforward.
Well, didn't someone mention that they liked it because you could deal people in at any time? That was a nice thing about that game too, was that literally someone can come along if there's three of you playing and be like, okay, we'll just deal you in. Now you're playing too.
Right. And you can do that. You don't necessarily do that too late into it, but it's not that difficult to do because there's one card. They're like, everyone discards all their cards and draw three more cards. And, you know, so there's a lot of things that can flip that in sort of a random way, where it's like, oh, okay, you joined a couple rounds late, that you're not really missing out on anything.
I feel like these filler games are almost like in the social media world, there's a new phrase. It's called snackable content, and it's for like really short pieces of content that millennials just love. And you know,
you can say that because you're a millennial.
Yeah, I can. I am. I was born in 1985. So yeah, it's kind of like, oh yeah, I remember playing Flux with you guys at one of the cons. It was like, yeah, oh, we're having dinner, and so we'll just break out Flux, and it was good. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I actually like Firefly Flux.
Careful, careful.
Well, try saying that three times fast.
Did you bleep that one? Maybe.
There was no intent.
We're fine.
What I'm getting to, though, is they are releasing Doctor Who Flux very, very soon. That's so I'm going to have to pick that up because that'll be a popular one. And Math Flux is actually a really fun game as well. I would expect to see that in almost every math teacher's classroom now, because it's really a lot about multiplications and like dealing with numbers and stuff.
What a smart idea to turn that into
Yep. And I think Chemistry Flux is on its way as well. So you're trying to build chemical compounds, and so those are your goals, and the different keepers are the different chemicals that you're trying to put together. And he worked with a science teacher to make sure that those were all like valid.
It makes sense. Yeah.
I'm going to have to get Claudia some. She's always teaching and stuff. So, yeah.
So, like, Flux, the mechanic there can be, you know, yes, there's a lot of randomness to it and things like that. But some people really enjoy it. It's an equalizer game. Anybody can win. Anyone can feel like they're on the edge of winning, but just be like, just a little bit, oh, if only I had one more turn, I would have had it. And it's really a game about setting yourself up to beat the randomness. But I want to talk about some other games, because I played a game this weekend. We were at our new local game store, and we picked up Bankruptcy, the card game.
All right.
This is a 100 card. I think like there's 250 card decks in there. And the whole point of the game is you have to go bankrupt. And Sydney's an accountant, so she thought it was a cute idea. So I was like, all right, we'll pick up the game and see how it is. The cover box art is not bad. It's not really, there was not a lot of shelf presence to it. It's really, the name is the only reason we bought it. Shuffle the decks together. It has three rules. Well, actually, there's three kinds of cards. There's one rule: whoever gets bankrupt first wins. Okay.
Which means getting rid of your
cards. Getting rid of all your cards.
Right.
You start out.
Uno?
Not necessarily. So you start out with five cards.
Although to be fair, when you got down to one card, you said Uno.
I did.
We were talking about this in the classic games episode. You just can't help it sometimes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's ingrained. And I thought it was fair because you're trying to get rid of all your cards. I'm like, okay, I only have one card left. That's true. So you have five cards. There's bear cards. So actually, we'll start with the bull cards. So the bull market, it's usually a number between 1 and 3. And you can play it on yourself or someone else, and you draw that many cards. So that's what that card does. You play that card, that happens. There are stock cards, which have values between 1 and 9, and they don't do anything else. They just fill your hand. You have bear cards, which usually have a range of like 9 to 20 or so. And if you play a bear card, you can discard any number of stock cards up to that value.
Okay.
And then there are special action cards that just kind of give you everyone draws
one
three
time
cards,
effect.
One time effects.
Okay.
So you use these cards to play and run out of hands. And Josh, we did. We played it at the table. It was very quick and easy to learn. It had a rule sheet, and the rules were like two paragraphs, and this is how you play the game. And I'm like, this is exactly like what people would consider a filler game. But then I started thinking that these are the kinds of games I'm going to bring on the cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because these are the kind of games that gamers and non-gamers alike can sit down, learn to play, actually enjoy. There's not a lot of competition to it. You don't have to invest hours into it. You don't have to like try to learn a whole set of rules or anything. And that's what got me thinking, is like, well, maybe filler games are getting a bad rap by being called filler games. Maybe filler games are really gateway games in a small package.
So what I think the difference is that a gateway game is not necessarily a good filler game.
True.
But most filler games are good gateway games. Filler games, by definition, are easy to learn and easy for multiple people to pick up at the same time. Because lots of games are easy to learn if you're playing with three other people who know how to play it.
Right.
These are games where you can hand someone the one paragraph rule sheet and everyone can learn it at the same time without feeling like, we don't know what's going on. Yeah. So
I mean, the way I taught the game, and again, we're talking about bankruptcy, is I took the four different cards out, bull, bearer, stock, and special, and said, here are these four cards. This is what they do. Now let's play.
Any game that has most of the text on the card that like kind of teaches you, you can read what it does in your hand, I think those games are the best filler games because it's really easy for anyone to sit down and do that.
Yep. Now let's bring up, so we're going to do an entire episode on dice games.
Yes.
But I want to bring up a lot of these blah, the dice game.
Like Catan the dice game,
Bang the dice game, which is the one I'll talk about. These are faster versions of their bigger counterparts. Are they filler games? Are they dice games? Are they light games? Like, what are they? I think most people would call them filler games.
I think every filler game can fit into another category as
well.
Like
a sort of Venn diagram type situation.
Yeah, like a filler game is like the center of all of the Venn diagrams. Like every type of game has a filler game subset, except maybe like heavy strategy or I don't know,
I haven't heard Twilight Imperium, the dice game yet.
But now let's look at the Tiny Epic games.
That's true.
Epic Galaxies touts itself as a 4X game, and it has all of those elements. It has 4X elements in it that you can play in about 45 minutes, takes up a relatively small footprint. It is not the easiest to learn. So that might be the one qualification where I might have to spend 10 minutes teaching it. But otherwise, it does qualify for possible fillerness.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I guess you can't get too strict about this, but I was wondering if 45 minutes sounds a little bit too long to me anyway for it to be filler game. But maybe, like, where do you draw the line?
Well, if you're trying to fill between Twilight Imperium and the next
Game of Werewolf or something.
Yeah, then it makes for...
Yeah, that's true. It depends on how much time you've got as to whether that filler game is the right filling for that time.
So I'm going to go back to Jason's comments. The games that you claimed for your purposes didn't necessarily fit your definition. If he has a gaming group, though, that knows those games already and they fit the time constraints that they're looking for, then they work as filler games for that group. You like part of the filler game is like knowing the audience you're filling for. So
yeah, maybe it's not the game so much as the way the game is used.
Yeah.
So like I say, I think Magic the Gathering, I would never, ever consider it a filler game for me. Right. Now, yes. I could sit down and play a game in 20, 25 minutes, sure. Presuming I know the cards already. Like, I know all the rules, but every set has, you know, walls of text on the cards. And that's not necessarily fair to say, but there's special rules and every card has something on there. And I have to know the cards you have in front of you and my cards. So for me, it's a much slower process because I'm relearning the rules as I play.
Now our friends Rob or Rich that play Magic all the time, go to events, that kind of stuff, they can pull up. I'm sure like they always just have a deck on them. I'm like almost positive. And they could, even though they're from different circles of my life, I'm pretty sure they could both just sit down and play each other, no problems, 25 minutes.
Yep. And for them, it's just, oh, let's fill some time here because... Yeah. You know, we're waiting for whatever to happen. And it does take up a relatively small footprint once you, and depending on your deck.
Yeah.
So I think I can agree that maybe for different people, different games can serve that time killing role. I would also argue that, well, I don't want to argue it because it sounds rough, but if I say all games are time killers, that sounds negative. But I don't think it is. I think all games are a way of spending our time. And we get to choose how we spend our time. It's just if we do it in small blocks, we call it filler. If we do it in larger blocks, we call it gaming. So I think, and
ooh, it's getting so philosophical.
I know. Now you see where I'm coming from.
On yeah, this. To be or not to be. Yeah. I get it.
So I want to talk about Bang the Dice Game a little bit, though.
Okay.
So Bang the Dice Game, derived from Bang the Card Game. Everyone gets a role. One person's the sheriff, and they reveal their role. There is then bandits, the vice sheriff, and a renegade. The vice sheriff is trying to help the sheriff win. The bandits are trying to kill the sheriff, and the renegade is trying to be the last person of the bandits to kill the sheriff. So they still want to kill the sheriff, but they are going to help the sheriff until all the bandits are dead. So that's the concept. Each, and then you have, so that's your role. Then you have a special character that has some kind of ability. In Bang, you're drawing, you have a hand of cards, and you can play Bang cards, which like shoot somebody, healing beer cards, which heal you, and various other special things you can play.
Wait, beer heals you?
Beer heals you, yeah.
Of course
beer
it does.
Beer has never healed anyone.
Oh, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. Beer, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah, back in those days, if you were in real pain, I imagine it would sort of heal, quote whiskey. Unquote.
Well, these are beer
My
mugs.
My personal opinion is wine, but...
Wouldn't hard alcohol, like, sterilize a wound as well?
Yeah, right? Yeah. I think it's a better choice. Yeah. But anyway...
So you digress. In Bang the Dice Game, you still have your role, and you still have your... So you have your character role, which gives you your special ability, and you have your hidden role. But they remove all of the cards and replace it with dice instead. So you're rolling different dice, and if one gun comes up, you can shoot this way. If two guns shoots, you can do different damage. You can also roll beer, which will allow you to heal yourself, and you can roll arrows, and arrows are the Indians coming to attack. And if you ever have five arrows in front of you, you take a bunch of damage, and then all the arrows go back to the middle. It's a very fast and easy way to play the game, way less time-consuming and fiddly than its other than its full
the card
game. Counterpart, right?
Yeah,
I think it's a way better implementation because it plays so much faster. This is one of these games I just carry around with me wherever because I can hand everyone a roll. I can say this is what these do. There's like five symbols you have to worry about, and that's it. Now we can play the game. And it's there's a little bit of take that, but there's a little bit of social deduction because do I shoot Josh? He might be like a good guy, but he might be a bad guy because I'm a bandit. I don't know. But if I'm the renegade, I have to act like I'm a sheriff because I want to be the last one alive. Kitty's the sheriff, of course. And, you know, so.
I don't know where I get this reputation for always being a good guy. It makes it really easy when I'm the bad guy.
I don't know if
he's
a good guy or just enforcer of the rules.
Yes. Well, the sheriff is revealed. So if you have the sheriff card, everyone knows who the sheriff is. So am I the first person to shoot the sheriff? Plus you have Gatlin guns, which harm everyone. So it's like, well, I know that Josh is bad and I don't really want to shoot you, Mr. Sheriff, but I'm going to play this card and it's going to hurt us all, except for me, of course. So it's like, wait a minute. You didn't have to do that. It's like, no, I had to. I mean, it's just the way the dice came up. What am I going to do?
It sounds like a good game.
I can't believe I haven't had you guys play this game. I'm going to bring it on the ship.
That we'll sounds it. Like my kind of jam, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I guess I still won't play it then, since it's medically ill-advised for me to go on cruises.
Well,
stupid Zika.
We will play it with you when we get back.
All right.
I say that for a lot of games. So that's Bang the Dice Game. Another game I'm bringing on the cruise. This is turning into games I'm bringing on the cruise.
That's fine. We're about to go on the cruise.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Well, and... So I was talking to Sydney about this and like what games we want to bring on. And we're talking, I was like, oh, you know, Great Western Trail would be great. Battlestar will probably actually bring on because there's a few people that really like that game.
Yeah.
But a lot of these bigger board games like Gloomhaven, even that came up. And for a little while, I was like, oh, yeah, I could bring a couple scenarios. And I'm like, we're going to be on a cruise.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to have to commit more than like an hour.
Yeah.
And then do something else. I want them people to be like being able to turn over new games.
Yeah.
I wanted a casual game night.
Also be able to play with different people.
Right.
When you're playing a long game, you get stuck in that same game group. When you've got a large group of diverse people, part of the fun is moving table to table, getting to play with other people you wouldn't normally sit down with necessarily.
Exactly. I want it to be kind of a mixer thing. And that's where, again, where I think filler games, quote unquote filler games, serve another purpose. Where you can say, okay, everyone's there. They're all going to come to game night because it's our wedding cruise and it's one of the official things we're doing. But I don't want anyone to feel like, oh my God, what did we just play? And what do I have to learn? And that is a lot
What's
of pieces. Exactly. So the next one I want to bring is Avenue. And Avenue is a game I haven't played yet, but the premise is so simple. It's amazing. It says it's a 2 to 10 player game, but I think it will actually play to about 150. And I think that's because that's how many little pieces of tablet are, things are in the tablet.
I want to see you try and play 150 version game of this. Maybe GameHold.com.
Imagine bingo.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing the player mats for
exactly.
It.
Yeah. So bingo is a game where you could be like, okay, we're going to sit down in a group of 10 and draw balls, and the first person that gets bingo wins. Or you can just put the people, you know, on in the audience, and everyone's playing from the same
two thing. Two fat ladies, 88.
You'll be announcing.
Oh, yeah.
So the way Avenue plays is everyone gets a sheet that has cities and grapes, and you're trying to connect roads through the grapes into the cities. Every card is the same. So it's not like bingo cards where it's all random, but everything's the same. And then the cards, there's a small deck of cards. I think it's like 50 cards. You shuffle them up and you pull it out, and there is a piece of road. So it might come down from the top and go out to the right. So everyone on their card sees that piece of road, and they just draw it anywhere on their card. So you don't have to, like, you're trying to make your, optimize your pattern, but you don't interact with anyone else. So it's like, all right, this is the piece. Everyone draws this road on your, all right, good, great. And then the next piece. When you're out of the road cards, you tally up your score. Whoever has the most wins. Everyone's playing at the same time. Everyone can compare. They can look at their, like, different patterns that they got.
I feel like this is one of those games that's like the most fun at the very end, when like everyone's run out of things, and then everyone starts looking at like, oh man, what were you doing? I was like so focused on my thing, I didn't even look up and see what everyone else is doing in like those last like 5 minutes. I think Bananagrams is a fun game like this, where you're like so focused on your thing that all of a sudden you look up like, you spilled what over there? Like, you know, those games are always fun to me.
Yep. Well, I'm thinking like, actually, once we're done, getting like a piece of poster board or something and just sticking them all on there and have everyone put their name on there, make kind of a cool like memento. Wedding memento. So that's Avenue. And it's a small box game. It's super, super simple to learn. Like, anybody can learn it. This, to me, is a great filler game. And again, I use it, I don't want to use it as filler. It's a great, easy game for everyone to play and use a small amount of time.
There's nothing derogatory about the word filler. You've just got a hang up here.
I know.
I think it's just you.
Actually, I'm going to put a question to the listeners. So this week, I want to know, when you email us to join, to enter the contest, tell me whether or not you look, like, where do you classify filler games in your area of games? Are you more or less likely to play a 2.5 hour game that you really, really like, or a 20-minute filler game that you kind of like? Like, which one are you going to go for?
Well, you just, like, said it in the question. You're like, the game that you really, really like, or the game that you sort of like. What if it's a 20-minute game that you really, really like?
Yeah, but then it's your favorite game.
All right. How do you want to word the question?
Do you think that the amount of time leads you to enjoy a game more or less?
Ooh, good question. I like that.
Thank you.
I also want to know whether or not you think filler games are a derogatory term.
Yes.
Or at least have a negative connotation.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious about that too. But I like that. Do you think that the amount of time the game takes, the more time, the better the game?
Yeah.
Less is time, that true? The more shallow the game.
And is there a point where it's just like, this game is gone to like, once you hit 6 hours, if you're going over 6 hours, it becomes less fun. Like, where do you draw that line of the most fun per That's time spent?
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, it is definitely going to be some kind of curve.
Yeah.
I want to spend 12 hours on any game I play.
I don't think you would believe that, Chris. Just for the listeners at home that didn't see the sarcasm on your face.
So another game that I think, quote unquote, real gamers tend to look down on is a game called Love Letter.
Real gamers, are they the purebloods of this world? Is someone like me a muggle? Is that what's going on here?
You look a little Draco Malfoy, so you should.
Oh, that's
know.
True.
There's a little Draco in you.
Yeah. It's just because I look pureblood doesn't mean I'm a muggle. Not a muggle.
I'm just talking about the same group that look down on Catan. Like, okay. You know, why would I play Catan when I could play something?
The hardcore gamers.
Yeah, when I could play something good. Mm. And you know, we've talked about Catan, and I'm very open to playing all kinds of games, but Catan's not going to be my first go-to game.
Yeah.
Love Letter is also not going to be my first go-to game. It's a game that plays in about 10 minutes. A hand plays in about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Oftentimes less. And you normally play until someone wins three hands. If you haven't played Love Letter, there are... I'm going to mess up some of it. There's cards that range from 2 to 11 or 12, I think. And the goal is you have one card in your hand. It's draw one, play one. And at the end, once all the cards are out, you want to have the highest card in your hand. Each card has a little bit of a special ability to it that can allow you to look at someone's cards, trade cards, compare, maybe insta-kill, those type of things. And that's essentially the whole game. Super easy to learn. All the instructions are on the cards. All you have to do is say, all right, here's a deck. Draw one, play one. That's the rule. And you can follow the instructions on the cards. We're getting this, and I think I mentioned this in a previous episode, we're getting wedding versions of Love Letter. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give a copy of this to everyone on the cruise because it comes in like a nice little silk bag with pink thread. It's really cute. But then I'm thinking, a lot of people have never played this game because it's one of those things where it's a filler game.
Interesting thing about this, it was one of the very first games I played when I started getting into the actual world of gaming in London before I'd even met, I'd met you, but before I'd lived with you and seen your collection and everything.
And did you like it?
I did. I immediately liked it.
I actually think this is a fairly commonly played game because it is, along with Sushi Go, this is the most common game I see somebody bring to a party that wasn't necessarily meant to be a gaming party.
Yeah.
But people who are there like to play games.
Yep. It's a super, super easy game to learn. And even if someone's never played it, you can teach them in a matter of a few seconds and sit down and play. So the way we're going to start our board game night on the cruise, which is funny because it's actually Tuesday, the day this episode's going to drop is the board game night. I think I'm pretty sure it's Tuesday. Maybe it's Monday. I don't know. In any case, we're going to start off with a love letter tournament. So I'm going to sit everyone down at tables and, you know, four people per table and teach everyone to play love letter. And then the winners of that table will combine and there'll basically be three rounds. As people get, pushed out of the tournament, we'll introduce up some of the other games.
You have to have prizes if this is a tournament.
There will be prizes. I don't know what they are yet. Sure. I still have to pack.
It might just be drinks or alcoholic beverages that I have here.
Yep. Yeah. But everyone will take home a copy of Love Letter because they will then know how to play it. And then they can...
And this is the wedding love letter. Am I right in saying you can only get this copy if you are actually getting married?
Yes. So you have to contact AEG. And then they want a picture of your wedding invitation. And then they will send you a special link that you can click on and you can order copies of the game from.
That's amazing. What a smart little idea to make it exclusive.
Yep.
Oh, I want one now. And I'm going to get one. Yep. As are you.
So, and I think that it's really cool because... like I said, I don't necessarily go to Love Letter. It's not going to be the game I pull off the shelf saying, hey, Josh, Kitty, we have a half hour. Let's play a game of Love Letter. There's a lot of other games I'd rather get you guys to commit another hour to so that we can play that. Kitty would be like, well, we have time for Time Stories. And, you know, so we'll put
that
on the table.
We're halfway through a game of Time Stories right now and don't think it isn't killing me inside.
It's the only game I didn't pack. I know. It's still downstairs. But I kind of like the idea of like starting off with this game. And I don't think of it as a filler game. I think of it as a starter game almost. Like, let's get the night
Kick
going.
Kick off the night, yeah.
Yeah. So, man, I do a lot of talking on this show.
That's fine. That's what
we do our best to interrupt you when we can.
We do.
But sometimes you get on a roll.
Talk about Sushi Go.
Sushi Go, I really like. It's a really fun game. So the way it works is everyone starts with a hand of cards and you pick one and pass the rest of the hand to the left. So it's kind of drafting and it's like Rummy where you're trying to make sets or get different kinds of cards to score the highest score that you can. But you know that the six cards that you don't pick are going to the person next to you. And that the last card from that hand, I think it's the same number.
I think you keep passing until you're out of cards.
Until you don't have a card to pass, yeah. And so There's a lot of strategy to it, and you see basically every card in the game as it goes through, but you don't know what's coming towards you. You don't, it's fun.
And you immediately play it. So as soon as you have that card, everyone knows what you're trying to collect.
Oh, yeah. I see.
It's played face up for
it's the whole game. The salmon one, and it's like, oh, she's going for the salmon one.
Pudding is always kind of the tricky one, because, like, who has pudding and who doesn't is very important to winning the game.
Oh.
Yeah, because different things would be some you want to collect a number of them. The more you have, the more points you get. Sometimes it's the sets. Sometimes it's have the least of or the most of, which is in the case of the pudding.
So if you have no pudding at all, you have like the least pudding, you're going to lose 6 points. Oh. But if everyone has no pudding, like the points get split amongst all of the people tied for the lowest and the highest. So if you're somebody else is playing as much pudding as you are, you're not going to get as many points for it, and it's fun. Ah. But yeah, that one I think is the most like looked at what's being played on the table.
Yeah.
For the drafting rounds.
Yep. So that's Sushi Go, and I really like this game because again, it's an easy game to play at a table.
Yeah.
It makes a great dinner game because it's about sushi and collecting little sushi stuff, and it's a lot of interaction because you're passing left and right, and you know you're kind of like always looking around. What are you trying to collect? It's like, oh, I really want this, but I don't want you to have that. So there's
I see what you're doing over there. Yeah. Yep. There's some fun ones.
So, you guys both played Starving Artist.
Yes.
Would you consider Starving Artist a gateway or not a, a filler game?
It depends on the situation. If some of these filler games we talk about, like playing at dinner, I would not play this at dinner.
Right.
If we're at a board game party, then yeah, this is a great filler game. You've got a table in front of you because it does take up a significant amount of space. I liked that you stood by and managed our fiddly bits for us, even though you weren't playing, so that made it a lot easier. But it is a very straightforward game once you understand the rules. I think the kind of player mat that you have in front of you is a really nice tool to like, it walks you straight through. You don't have to like look at the rule book every round.
It's very intuitive. Yep. Yeah.
So real quickly for the people who haven't heard us talk about it on a previous episode, Starving Artist is a game that is designed around using public domain art. And you have little colored cubes. And the way what you're doing is you're spending cubes as a currency where you're trying to get one of these canvases. Then you use those colored cubes and you're placing them on different squares on the canvas to try to complete that canvas. So you can sell that so you can get food, hence the Starving Artist. If you don't sell a painting for 5 rounds, you die of starvation. Normally, you're able to do that. And normally, you're trying to get a certain number of points, which changes based on the number of players, or a certain number of canvases completed, which is based on the number of players.
Can you cut off your own ear and eat that if you're getting really low on food?
You cannot.
Damn it.
Nope. You can only sell paintings.
Seemed like something you'd be able to do in that game.
But you can't.
All right.
I like that they have kind of like comic book pop art as like it's easier to make, but it doesn't sell for as much, whereas like the more masterpiece works, they're usually harder to complete.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah, that's a really good observation.
Yeah, the comic book covers don't give you any points, I don't believe, but they give you food.
Yeah, they give you lots of food. That's right.
Yep, but the masterpieces give you not as much food, and they give you enough, not as much food, but they give you a lot of points.
Lots of points. And so, that's points. It's whoever gets to so many points first, or if somebody dies, then you finish that round, and that's how the game ends.
Yep. And it's super easy to learn. There's only 3 actions you can take. So you say you can work, which allows you to draw cubes from a bag. You can buy a canvas, or you can paint. And you get to do 3 actions on your turn. 2 actions or 3 actions?
2 actions.
2 actions on your turn. And you just keep doing that until someone wins.
I think you're always allowed to swap cubes.
You can
swap.
You can trade 2 for 1, 3 for 4 for 2 or something like that. It's a 5 for 2. It's a diminishing returns. So you get one free trade.
If you really need one color though.
Yep.
It makes sense.
Yep. So it's, to me, it's short. It's easy to learn. It plays 2 to 4. So it feels like a game that I would call in that category by definition. But the reason I bring it up is because anytime we play this game, it's always the last thing we do at night saying, usually it's Sydney saying, you have to play this game. It's really cool. And I completely agree. but it tends to be one of those things like, let's cap the night off with this because it's a really cool game to look at and play, but it doesn't have to be played between something. Like it's almost like a, what, it's not a centerpiece, but a capstone maybe.
Yeah.
That could be type of thing.
It's still like a light, short game. It's just really cool.
It didn't feel that short for some reason, but it probably was fairly short.
Well, you were in it, so that was a problem. See what I did there? It's been a couple episodes since you got that one in. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
We haven't called you out for being slow lately.
That's very true.
So that is Starving Artist. All right. And to be fair, I need to bring up a class of games, which I feel are filler games that sometimes get promoted to being real games. And these are actually just filler games. And that is the Apples to Apples class of games, better known as Cards Against Humanity. Or any of the spinoffs where you have two cards, you're matching them together and
their headquarters hilarity ensues. Chicago as well. Cards Against Humanity.
They are.
Yes.
Yep.
I feel like these are a different category of games because I feel like almost all board game parties or get-togethers devolve into a giant game of Cards Against Humanity towards the end. And it's like one game ends and they start a game of this being like, oh, it's just a filler. And then slowly all the other games end and they just add people in and it turns into this monstrosity of a game with like 18 people all just at the end of the night, so probably having several adult beverages.
So maybe it's not a filler game as much as it is a vacuum game.
It's like a black hole.
Cards Against Humanity is the black hole of games.
You really hate Cards Against Humanity.
I don't hate it. I just don't like it at all.
It's not that it's bad. It just has no redeeming qualities, Josh.
Yeah.
I still don't see how that's not you hating it.
Think about it. Just think about it.
Okay.
All right. This is our episode on filler games. I don't think we did terrible.
Oh, well, maybe you just made it sound that way. What's wrong with you? You're normally so full of confidence, Chris.
No, I'm in a philosophical point right now. I think it's just there's so much going on, so I keep thinking like deep things about this stuff.
Right, yeah, you're very reflective now that you've moved house and your life is changing.
I know. It's just like, is gaming really what I thought it was? Maybe it is, but maybe it isn't.
But you're going to give some people a heart attack saying stuff like that. It sounds like you're going off gaming.
No, we are not. Honestly, so we were just talking, I don't think we were talking on air. So I am now about an hour north of the building that Kitty and I lived in together. Josh lives like a 25-minute walk from this building. And we're talking about like how we're going to record the podcast. So I'm basically, my reason for coming down into the city, quote unquote, is to record. So Sundays, I'll still be coming into the city.
It's like and going to church.
Yep. We're still going to record in person whenever possible. We do have a contingency to record over the internet if necessary, but we're not going
to
default to that.
That.
Yeah. That requires some technical workout. And we will, we'll just keep doing what we do because I am recording an episode before I go on the cruise, then getting married, and we get back, we're recording another episode. Like, the podcast is something I put as a priority and stuff. So
you're recording, it's not going anywhere. Aren't you? I thought you were going to miss one or something.
No.
You're not going to miss a week.
No.
This episode's going to drop while we're on the cruise, and as soon as we get back, we're going to record the next week's one.
Sorry, I got the timeline. Yeah. I thought, we're actually going to miss our streak, but no, we're still going to have every single week.
61 solid weeks so far.
I'm impressed.
Also, I know how to do the things. Chris doesn't have to be here.
That's true. You have.
I'm gonna do like a sad episode by myself while you guys are on the cruise. I'll just be like side chat with Kitty.
I'm
day
Kitty.
Six all by myself.
Well, Kitty knows all this stuff because she has her own side podcast, Fresh Baked Books, out every
on hiatus.
We are on temporary hiatus.
Oh yes.
But well, for weddings and babies, Eve is getting married, and I'm having a baby, and that just takes up so much.
Sure.
Time.
But I mean, people that haven't listened to you can look at your
there,
back.
Yeah, there
catalog.
Are like 20, I think, ish. No, not even. Like 17 episodes.
And it's like
out
a
there.
Fusion between like baking and books. It sounds cool.
Yeah. It's fun.
All right. Remember that time limit books. I said on the SD card?
We're running
close
to it.
We're hitting it. All
yeah.
Right.
So hold on. I got to do. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Tabletop Game TLK, or you can follow me at Game Master Chris. You can follow us at Facebook at /Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. BGG is where we do all our, you know, kind of talking and stuff. I need to become more active on that thread. I promise once all the crazy is, I'll actually participate in the conversation. I read everything. We try to get as much of it on the air as possible. But it's the listeners are having great conversations on there at least. And you can get there at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. And if you want to review us, we love reviews. iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever you want to call it. I still call it the Sears Tower, so it hasn't been that for like 8 years. Besides that, I think that's it. Josh, go.
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider emailing us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Giljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Rudy Lou, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan, don't you know I'm loco, Phillips, Caliber Brian, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, and David Sellers. Until next week, when we talk about significant others of gamers. Keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. Okay, so now I need to go home, unpack all the games, all of the clothes, so I can repack the games we're taking on the cruise, so I can wash the clothes and pack those, so that I can wake up in the morning and drive to the airport and get on a plane to go to Orlando.
Do we even have time on the card for this bit?
Barely.